Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on how to buy a house right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant negotiated by Moses out of Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush said that what Americans wanted, though, was jobs, jobs, jobs. But you know, that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these experts in the field recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not measured in employment. It's certainly not measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. The money is in buying, selling, and trading, not in some public business or employment like jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I cashed in on our inheritance and learned how to collect the benefits of that old covenant contract. And to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, that's called real property. Property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you want to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for information on my CD Home School for Adults and order my free general law CD package at the same time. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call and order right now? The number is 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free of charge. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. I want you to do it right now before you forget. Real estate. You know, real estate is the business that everyone wants to get into and nobody can lose money in. I don't know. Back in 1840, there were some real estate losses. For instance, tobacco land in Virginia, North Carolina, was selling for $8,000 an acre in 1840 and 41. It was a great real estate bubble. Of course, the market ultimately collapsed. And when it did, so did the hopes and dreams of all the people that were paying $8,000 an acre for land. You got to remember that $8,000 an acre for land back in the 1840s and 50s, you know, just multiply that by 10. I mean, it was an astronomical sum of money. Crazy. Kind of like the tulip bubble. Remember that story back in the 1600? They got to buying tulips, you know, from Holland because there was a big bubble in it. Well, more recently, we had a big bubble in stocks back in the 1990s. You know, people thought, well, God, we'd just buy stocks because it's up, up, and away, and we'll never lose any money. Well, these bubbles, whether it's in real estate, tulips, or stocks and bonds, or whatever it happens to be, and they all come to an end at some point in time. Today, in 2005, we're in a real estate bubble. To give you an idea of the size of this bubble, I'm an old-timey general contractor, and I was building houses back in the 1970s, you know, 1980s. And when I was building houses, you could build an FHA 235 house for about $15,000 and sell it for $30,000 or $35,000. That's 1970. That house today is selling median price now. Median price last time I saw, $169,000. Median. That's the average real estate price in some markets, like San Francisco. Houses are selling for $650,000 on average in San Francisco, California. The same house, square footage, is selling in Jacksonville, Florida for $150,000. You could sell your house in San Francisco, move to Jacksonville, Florida, pay for the house, own it free and clear, and put $500,000 in the bank at the same time. Now, that's not uncommon when market conditions get out of balance, and they're certainly out of balance today. Of course, if you live in Jacksonville, Florida, and you want to move to San Francisco, you can sell your house in Jacksonville for $150,000, and then move to San Francisco, buy a house, and take on a $500,000 mortgage. And, you know, you have to pay interest on these numbers, and these numbers are so big that you can't pay them off. Well, it is the average run-of-the-mill Joe Sixpack can't pay them off. Now, maybe if you're a dealing on the, in stocks on the stock market and making $1 million a year, I guess you could probably do that. But the average Joe Sixpack in America today is making $41,000 a year. Let's just kind of multiply that out a little bit, you know. $41,000 a year is your average income. And the average house price is $169,000. So you just take $169,000 and divide that by 41. That's four times your annual income. Four times your annual income. And we used to have a rule of thumb that you'd never buy a house, never make payments that are in excess of 25% of your annual net income. So if you're making $41,000 a year and you got to pay taxes and all the rest of it, assuming that you could net $20,000 a year, you wouldn't buy a house. You wouldn't make payments greater than 25% of your $20,000 net, which would be about $4,000 or $5,000 a year. It'd be a reasonable price for you to be paying. So if you were making payments of $4,000 or $5,000 a year, which is half of your $40,000, you know that you could probably handle. But people today are buying houses, and they're not even making the payments. This house never amortizes. This house, you're just making payments on it forever. Payments forever. That's not a business deal. That's just an insane purchase. Now, when you buy a house, wouldn't you kind of like to think that sometime in the future you're going to own this thing? And that you're going to pay a reasonable price for it. Has anybody ever worked out the numbers? You ever sit down and say, gee, my house payments are $700 a month, and I'm going to make these payments for 360 months. Have you ever done anything like that? I mean, it's a wild new concept over here. I don't think the average guy does it. We have mortgages that are called adjustable rate mortgages. Now, that's where you buy a house with an adjustable rate mortgage. And right now, they're about 4.5%, about a percentage point, or, you know, maybe 2 percentage points below what it would cost you for a fixed rate mortgage. So let me cover those two terms for you. A fixed rate mortgage is where, let's say you walk into the bank and you buy a house, and let's pay $169,000 for the house. And then the bank says, well, that's going to be 5.5% interest over the next 30 years, and your interest rate never changes. An adjustable rate mortgage is where you buy a house, and the interest rate is only 4.5%. So it's a percent or a percent and a half below what a fixed rate mortgage is. But when interest rates go up, your adjustable rate mortgage, your interest rate goes up. So when interest rates hit 20%, well, then your interest rate on your house is going to go up to 20%, whereas the guy that had a fixed rate mortgage and paid a percent more now gets it locked in so that when interest rates go to 20%, like they did in 1979 and 80, it remains at 5%. Your payments always remain the same. So right away we can see that the fixed rate mortgage is cheaper over time. And then there's a thing called the balloon payment. Whenever you get into a deal where you can't finance it, you can't handle the payments every month, to lower the payments, let's say we want to buy a $169,000 house, but you can't afford the $700 a month payments, but you can afford $600. So then what they do is they put a balloon payment at the end. So just take that $100 a month, $1,200 a year times 30 years. Let's just do that. $1,200 times 30, which is $360, is $36,000. It's 360 $100 bills, $36,000. Just tack that on to the end. So you make $600 a month payments instead of $700. And then 30 years later, when you get ready to make your last payment, you make your last payment, which is $600. And then immediately you have to pay $36,000 along with it. And if you don't, of course, well, then you lose. And when you buy a house and you buy it on time, what you're really doing, you're betting that you can make all the payments on this house, 360 consecutive payments without missing one. The bank is sitting there saying, well, we bet that out of 30 years, 360 payments, you're going to miss one, and we hope it's payment number 357, 358, or, you know, 359 or 360, along in there somewhere after you've paid for this house and you get into trouble and you can't make the last 3, 4, 5 payments. That's where the bank makes its money. It's on foreclosures. And then the average guy is only in this house for 5 years. 5 years, and he's going to move. And that's because these houses are appreciating in value. Appreciating in value. Right now, the inflation rate's running 12%. I know, in spite of what the government tells you, they lie a lot. It's running 12%. That's 1% a month. And houses have been appreciating at the rate of about 20% a year in some locations like California. So, you know, you got your $169,000 house. So let's take our $169,000. And let's just appreciate that times 0.120. Your house is going to be worth $202,800. Next year, you know, at 20% interest, 20% inflation rate and 20% appreciation. And people tend to think that houses appreciate. I'm going to tell you, as an old-timey contractor, that when you buy a house on a 30-year mortgage, the roof won't last for 30 years. In fact, they're what we call a 20-year roof, and at 20 years, you got to replace it. And the carpet doesn't last for 30 years, and the paint doesn't last for 30 years. In fact, there's not very much about this house that's going to last for 30 years, and if it gets any termites into it, the lumber that's in the walls won't last for 30 years either. So you get a 30-year mortgage on a 20-year house. That's about what it boils down to. And houses deteriorate, you know, moth and rust doth corrupt. I just wanted to let you know that. It's kind of a shock, I think, to most people. Now, the house is actually worth less as the years go by. So if you buy a brand-new house today, and assuming that it was worth $169,000, it should be depreciated out. In fact, this is what you do it on your income tax over 20 years. So you take 169, and then we're going to divide that by 20. And so UCP should be divided to, you know, depreciating this house out at about $8,500 a year, so that at the end of 20 years, this house is worth nothing. And we shouldn't be paying any more taxes on it, assuming that it's still habitable, which it won't be, unless you put a new roof on it, and put a new carpet in it, and put in a new dishwasher, washer and dryer and so on. And you have to have upkeep. There's costs involved. And we, in real estate, you know, we generally figure about 5% a year for upkeep. That's just, you know, paint the place every once in a while, replace the carpets and drapes and curtains and things like that. Things that people don't even think about. All right? Now, when you buy a house, in today's crazy real estate world, this house keeps appreciating. Well, it keeps appreciating against inflation. And so you could say that at least it protects me from the ravages of inflation. But does it really? Does it really? If you'll get a pen and paper out here, we'll go through the numbers on a house. And I'll show you that when you buy a $50,000 house at 6% interest over 30 years, the loss on it is a minimum $90,000. You're going to lose $90,000 on the transaction. And the break-even point is at 5 years. And if you hold a house longer than 5 years, you're losing money every month you live in it. Now, that's the real estate transaction. That's the business side of the transaction. So jump up with your pen and paper, and I'll show you why that's so. And then if you want to go out and buy a house or two or three and make money in real estate, well, you can get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. After all, it's a popular myth, and, you know, like Alice in Wonderland and Cinderella, it's a myth that we love. We love it. And it's the American dream, living in the suburbs. Well, that's what we're told, the American dream, living in the suburbs. I'm not quite sure why that's the case. We're living in houses that we can't afford, that we have overpaid, that we're losing money on, but we love it, and we keep after it. Well, one of the first things that I hear about home ownership is, where would I live if I do not buy a home? And so let's try building our own home. A $50,000 home costs $25,000 to build. Did you know that? Did you know that those of us that are in the contracting business, when we build a house and put it on the market to sell, did you know that we make a profit on that house? Have you ever wondered how much profit does a building contractor make when he builds a house? And the answer is, he doubles his money. He doubles his money. That's why building is such a popular pastime among building contractors. When we build a house for $50,000, and if we got a $50,000 house to sell, or 100 or whatever, just cut that in half. And that's what we had to pay the carpenters, plumbers, and electricians, and all the rest of those people to build a house. Now in California, the average cost now is $30,000 to break ground. By the time you buy all of your permits and all of your special use taxes and one thing and another, the government has charged you $30,000, $30,000, and that's just for the permits to build this house. So that's one of the costs that goes into home ownership, at least in California, is $30,000. So this $50,000 home costs $25,000 to build. And so when you buy this house with an 8.5% fixed rate mortgage for 30 years, you buy one house for you at retail, and you buy two houses for the banker at the same time. Did you know that? Yeah, 8.5%. Now, when it gets down to 5 or 6%, it's a little better. You buy one house for you, and you buy one for the banker, or 1.5 for the banker, something like that. Now, you got to be a pretty wealthy person, pretty wealthy fellow to go out here and buy one house for you and two for the banker, don't you? Now, that's the way Americans do it. Now, we didn't always do that. See, our forefathers, our great-great-granddaddies, they were pretty smart people. They didn't go to college. They went to the sixth grade like my granddad, or the eighth grade like my grandma. And those people could add and subtract, multiply and divide, and they understood the percentages, and they understood amortization and interest rates and what happens when you pay interest. That's right. They didn't have degrees after their names. And they weren't in debt. You know, the average American today is in debt up over his eyeballs. Of course, I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. You're already in debt up over your eyeballs, and I'm not telling you something new. But have you ever thought about being free and clear? I mean, just think about your condition today. What if you owned your house free and clear, owned your car free and clear, and you didn't have any insurance payments to make? I mean, we talked about this the last program, remember? I mean, you'd be a lot better off, wouldn't you? Yeah, just think about it. If you didn't have any house payments, didn't have any car payments, and you could produce your own food and groceries, let's just say for sake of our discussion here, and you weren't paying insurance, and let's suppose that maybe you didn't pay any interest payments on your big screen TVs and things like that. I'll bet you your standard of living would go up dramatically, wouldn't it? I mean, you'd have a lot more money to spend. You'd have a lot more money in the bank. You'd have money to go on a Carnival cruise or something like that. All right, now, $25,000 is what it costs to build a $50,000 house. So when you got $169,000, let's just round it off to $170,000. Just take $170,000, divide that by two, and then there's an $85,000 profit in these new houses at the median price, $85,000. You know how long it takes to build a house? Well, little Georgie Gordon with one helper, two of us, can build a house in 90 days. 90 days. You know, around 1,200-1,400-foot house. You know, you get up to 2,000, 2,500. You know, the bigger the house, longer it takes to build, and more people it takes, and more money it costs to build it, and so on. You know, you got big houses that sell for $500,000, and then you got little cracker box houses, and everything in between. But I'm just pointing out to you that there's a keystone markup in building these houses. That's why people are out here building houses, because there's money to be made. There's people out here that'll sign these contracts. Not that these people can afford these houses, and when the interest rates start going up on these adjustable rate mortgages, many of you people out there are going to be sadly disappointed. Of course, that's a future event, and you've never seen that happen before in your lifetime, and when it happens, it'll be a total shock. But rest assured, it's going to happen. It's always happened in the past. I don't see any reason why it won't happen again in the future. All right, so let's take this house now. The man who makes $100,000 a year spends it all. Did you know that? And the man that makes $50,000 a year, he spends it all. He didn't have anything left over at the end of the year. The man that makes $25,000 a year, he spends it all. The man that makes $12,500 a year, he spends it all. Did you ever notice that? Well, just think about it. If you're a man that's 50 years old right now, you started work when you got out of college. And when you started to work when you got out of college, did you make as much or more fresh out of college as you're making today at age 50? Isn't it a fact that you started in your working career for less money than you're making now? Of course, that isn't always true. You know, some people end up age 50 or 60 and they find out that they're making less money today than they did years ago. But I'm just pointing out to you that ordinarily, you know, you start out at $20,000 a year and you go up to 30, 40, 50, and 60, and 70, and 80, and you try to make more and more money every year, don't you? And as time goes on and you're making a little more money, did you increase your standard of living? In other words, when you were a kid, fresh out of college, you know, you were driving a used car, and then a little later on you decided you'd move up, and now you're driving a new car. You don't own that new car, but that used car that you bought when you were in college, you owned that. Remember, you paid $1,500 for it, paid cash, and you owned it. Today, you got a new SUV, but you don't own it, but you got payments of $500-$700 a month on it now, don't you? Are you really better off today than you were when you got out of college? Now, here's a rule of thumb. Old Frank Rocha taught me a lesson. He said, you know, the average guy today spends everything that he makes. And I said, yeah. I'm 15 years old when I was told this. I said, yeah, I see that that's about true. So old Frank, an immigrant from Portugal, said to me, the secret to making money is always save half. Okay, if you can learn that principle, it's very simple. It's always save half. So if you're making $12,500 a year, you live like the man that's making $6,000. If you're making $25,000, you cut that in half and you live like the guy that's making $12,000. If you're making $50,000, you live like the guy that's making $25,000. If you're making $100,000, you live like the guy that's making $50,000. And remember, you know, when you started out in life, you could make it on $12,000. As life went on, you could make it on $50,000. And as life went on, you know, you could make it on $100,000. All right, so here's the trick. Whatever it is that you make, you save half, and that's your investment capital, and it's that investment capital that you're going to use to make money, whether it's in real estate or whatever it happens to be in. Now, there's money to be made in real estate. Real estate brokers make lots of money, and building contractors, they make lots of money. I was never disappointed in real estate, and I was never disappointed in contracting. Now, if you're a consumer, you're a person that goes out here and pays that real estate brokerage, and if you're a guy that's out here buying this house over here, now, there's no money for you. You're the guy that pays us. You're the guy that enslaves yourself to making these payments. And if you want to do that, God bless you and more power to you, and we need more like you. It's like taxpayers. God bless all you taxpayers. We need more of you. I love them. Now, the man who makes $100,000 a year spends it all, the same as the guy that makes $50,000, $25,000, man, he spends it all. Save half. Cut your standard of living by 50%. If you make $20 an hour, you live like you made $10. If you made $50,000, live like you did when you were making $25,000. Stop paying income tax, insurance, and interest. Practice strict liability. Stop practicing usury. Start tithing. In less than 3 years, you'll have the cash to build your own home. In 6 years, you'll have enough money to pay retail and have that home built for you. So at the end of 3 to 6 years, you'll own your own home free and clear. Then the next 24 years will be clear profit to you instead of a loss. Did you catch that, boys and girls? That's the formula that Frank Rocha used when he came to this country with $5 in his pocket in 1922. And he passed it on to me, and I'm passing it on to you. Now, of course, Americans will say, why, we can't do that. And you're exactly right. Americans cannot do that. I don't deny that. Now, of course, Filipinos, Vietnamese, Portuguese, and other immigrants from Mexico and any place else in the world, they can come to America and make it easy. And old Frank told me that. Frank told me that. In 1955, I was 15 years old. Frank Rocha, the immigrant from Portugal, who at that time owned his 140 cows and a little while later owned his 240 acres. Yeah, he came here with $5 in his pocket, and when he checked out in 1970, he had more than $1 million. In 2005 dollars, that would be about $3 or $4 million today. Came here with $5 and left with $4 million. And he said, any Portuguese can come here to the United States and make it easy. He said, but none of you Americans can go to Portugal and make it at all. You would all starve to death because it's so easy here that none of you people have what it takes to make it where it's tough. And that's just my observation of mine. So when Americans say to me, we couldn't live like that, they're not whistling Dixie through a straw hat. Americans can't do this. Now, for you immigrants from Mexico, this is all downhill from here. And as I've said before, I worked for Rocha for 3 years. I was 15 years old, left there when I was 18, went to high school at the same time. That was the toughest place in the valley. When I left there, life for me has been downhill ever since. If you can make it in the toughest place in the valley, by the time you move over to Tortales, which is the easiest place in the valley, you can't miss. It's kind of like killing Goliath, you know. That's what David said. The Israelites looked at Goliath and said, he's so big, who can stand before him? And David looked at him and said, he's so big, how can I miss? So I was looking at the problem from the perspective of half full, half empty. All right, let me cover this for you one more time. If you'll stop paying income tax, insurance, and interest, practice strict liability. Strict liability is the opposite to insurance. Stop paying usury and interest. Start tithing. In less than 3 years, you will have the cash to build your own home. You, Joe Sixpack, cut your living standard in half. And in 6 years, you'll have enough money to build your own home. In 3 years, rather, you can build your own home. In 6 years, you'll have enough money to pay retail. I mean, you can go hire me to build it for you in 6 years. So at the end of 3 to 6 years, you'll own your own home, free and clear. All right, now let's try this out. Let's suppose you try this program. You save half of what you earn right now, and you go out and you buy your house and build it and pay for it, and you earn it, and you got this house paid for in 6 years. For the next 24 years, and then let's just say your house payments are $700 a month times 700, okay, for the next 24 years. All right, that's 24 times 12 times 700. That's $201,600. And you will have $200,000, which is more than the price of the $169,000 home to start with, isn't it? So you're going to make all that on the interest that you're going to save. Because when you buy a house, you're buying one for you and one for the banker. What would you think if I told you that I knew a young fellow one time that built a house about every 5 or 6 years over a period of 40 years? He now owns 6 houses that he rents plus the house that he lives in. He built 7 houses in his lifetime. He was an electrician. He wasn't even a contractor, just a wage earner. Just a working stiff, blue collar guy. And he's probably the wealthiest guy in the 1957 Eureka High School graduating class. He never went to college. Just went out there and went to work and used his head and didn't pay interest in usury and built some houses and did it himself. And he's worth more than $1 million. And I don't know that anybody else in that class is worth more than that or any greater success in life than old Henry was. All right, I got to give you a little caveat here. So stand by. We're at the halfway point in here. And we're learning how to buy a house. I'm going to show you how to do that. I already told you how to do it, and I'm going to show you how. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page at the website at georgegordon.org. And remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. That's to bait you in and suck you in and say so I can sell you a school later on. But you might as well find out what it's all about. Doesn't cost anything. Door to yours, just to call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and just send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. Now, just to show you that not everybody in the world agrees with what I have to tell you, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or the local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to the website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, there's our little caveat. You got your pen and paper? Are you ready? Now, let me show you what the costs are on this house. Let's suppose you want to buy a house. We'll just use a number. Let's pull one right out of the air. $50,000. So let's go out here and buy a house for $50,000. The year, 1955. And let's pay an interest rate of 6%, which was about standard back in 1955. Now, in the old days, we used to make down payments. They used to require 10% down payment. So you had to come up with $5,000 cash and finance $45,000 over 30 years. 360 payments. That was pretty standard. That would make your monthly payments about $300 a month in round numbers. I think it was $297, but $300 a month would carry that. So you got $5,000 down, $300 a month payment, 6% interest, 1955, buying a $50,000 house. And by the way, a $50,000 house in 1955 was a humongous, big, expensive house. I can remember across the street, 1955, from our house on H Street, a guy sold a house for $27,000, and we thought that was crazy. My grandmother bought that house off 1724 H Street in Eureka, California for $4,400 in 1944. $4,400, which, you know, was a lot of money. Of course, money was worth something then. Today it's not worth very much. In fact, if you want to know what your money is worth from 1930 to today, it's worth 3.5 cents on the dollar. 14 cents on the dollar from 1940. All right, now the total interest on this transaction is going to be $62,100. So when you finance a house, 6% interest, $50,000, pay $5,000 down, finance 45, you're going to pay $62,100 in interest. Isn't that just special? Now the amount financed is $45,000. The principal payments per month are $125 a month. So out of your $300 a month, $125 goes to principal, $175 goes to interest. And that's real neat, isn't it? You're paying more in interest than you do in payments on the house. Your average monthly payments will be $297 a month. That's why I rounded it off to $300. Taxes per month, $50. Upkeep per month, $50. And your insurance per month, about $50. Now, the brokerage fee on this transaction is 5%. So 5% of a $50,000 sale is $2,500. And then when you go to sell this house, when you get through, at the end of this period of time, you're going to sell this house for five times, on average, five times what you paid for it. So this is the lure, you know. People will buy a house for $50,000, and it's going to be worth more when you go to sell it. More people get excited about that. For instance, if you'd have bought a house about 1975, and you wanted to sell it today, you'd be selling it for about five times what you paid for it. Now, of course, the dollars that you're receiving today are worth less than 50 cents on the dollar. So you already lost half the value to inflation over the past 30 years. I don't think anybody ever adds in the inflation loss. They add in the inflation value. Well, we're gonna add it all up, and we'll show you that if you're going to make a profit on a house in purchasing power, you got to sell it within 5 years. Anything over 5 years and you're losing your butt. All right, so there are three fixed expenses: taxes, upkeep, and insurance, $150 a month. Now, the brokerage on this thing total is $15,000. That's $12,500 when you sold it for $250,000, plus $2,500 when you bought it. Then there's points, mortgage insurance, title search, closing costs. That's $5,000. For 30 years, the total cost is $186,100. You buy a $50,000 house, finance $45,000 of it, stick $5,000 cash out of your pocket into it. Your total cost over 30 years, $186,100. I want you to write that down. Purchase price is $50,000. The year is 1955. Interest rate is 6%. Monthly payments $300. Down payments $5,000. Total interest paid is $62,100. The amount financed is $45,000. Principal payments per month are $125. Average monthly payments are $297. Taxes per month are $50. Upkeep per month is $50. Insurance per month is $50. Brokerage is $15,000 going in and coming out. Points, mortgage, insurance, title search, closing costs, $5,000. Now, this is back in 55. Cost you more than that today. For 30 years, the total cost is $186,100. So I've already worked out these numbers for you so that you can see how these numbers are going to work out. Sale price in 1985, 30 years later, you're going to sell it for $250,000, five times the amount that you paid for it. So now take your total cost of goods sold, $186,100, and subtract that from $250,000, which is your sale price. And your gross profit for 30 years is $63,900. $63,900. Total income per year, $2,130. Capital gain tax, $17,892. Adjusted net profit, $46,008. Adjusted gross profit, or adjusted net profit rather, $46,000 over 30 years. What's the percent per year that you made on your invested capital? You invested in this project $186,000. And over 30 years, you made $46,000, or a little over $1,000 a year, $1,500 a year. Is that a good investment? Well, where I come from down on the farm, we wouldn't get out of bed for that kind of money. I mean, that's just nonsense. It's like buying stocks and investing your money, $10,000, let's say, in the stock market, and some stock over here making 5% on it. Hell, that doesn't cover inflation. Now, people go to college and they get degrees after their names, and they go to the Harvard Business School, and they get to be big and fancy and important people, and they become lawyers and doctors in my community over here. But I mean, these people are in debt up over their eyeballs. They live the American dream. And they make a lot of money, but they spend a lot of money. They don't have anything themselves. As my old granny used to say, that guy doesn't have a pot to piss in, a place to put it, or a window to throw it out of. That's what old granny used to say. And that's been my observation over the years, too. So let's take a look at this in more pragmatic terms. Let me show you what happened to you. Remember that $5,000 down payment that you made back in 1955? $5,000 down, 10%. How many 1955 Chevrolet automobiles could you buy with that $5,000? Well, the answer to that is two. 1955, you could have bought a 55 Chevy 6 for $2,500. I know, my daddy did. All right, so just write down two cars. That's your down payment. You paid two cars down. All right. Now remember, you're paying $300 a month. Now $300 a month times 12 months in a year is $3,600. Now back in 1955, you could have bought a 55 Oldsmobile, Buick, or Pontiac, or Mercury for about $4,000. $400 more. If you'd wait until the end of the model year, Raymond Souza and his two brothers walked into the Buick dealer in Eureka, put $3,600 on the counter, and walked out with a brand new 1956 Buick automobile. $3,600 cash. Now they were priced at $4,200. But you see, they bought it at the end of the model year. See, the new 57s had already come out, and so the 56s, you know, needed to be discounted out, and so the Souza boys went in there, put the money on the counter, walked out with the car. So that's the way you buy cars. Now assume you want to buy a new car. Of course, there's a better way to buy cars. We'll talk about that another time. So let's take your $3,564. That's one Buick car, 1956. And then 1957, let's buy a 1957 Oldsmobile. And you know what you got here? You got two cars, 1955. One car, 1956. One car, 1957. Now let's try this. In 1985, what is the price of a 1985 Chevrolet? Well, 1985, the price was $11,500. So after you make your annual payments for the year, that's $3,564 times 26. Net loss over 30 years, $92,664. $92,664 is the minimum loss over 30 years. And here's what happened to you. You see, you could go out in the marketplace and you could buy a new car every year. Let's suppose in 1955, you're making $1,000 a month over at Mutual Plywood, $1,000 a month. Not an unreasonable amount of money back in those days. A little on the high side, but not unreasonable. You're making $1,000 a month. And then you're taking 300, or about one third of your money, a little over the 25% that they recommended at the time, and you're buying this $50,000 house, which is at least double, you know, the house that you should be buying for $1,955, and you're going to do this for 30 years. And well, you know, you could have taken the same $300 every month for 12 months and gone out and bought a brand new car. You know, when I was a kid, it was common for people. You know, Richard Van Pelt's dad bought a brand new 1956 or 7 Oldsmobile, paid cash for. He worked at Mutual Plywood. My dad bought a 1955 Chevrolet automobile for $2,500. And it was common for people to pay cash for a car. And I don't know of anybody today that pays cash for a car, except maybe old Louis Meinzer does. I mean, he goes in, plunks down $30,000-$40,000 for a new pickup now. But that's the only guy that I know of that does it. I never have had a new car, and if I live to be 110, I'm not going to. That's because there's no money to be made in them. And I'm a businessman, and I always look at money. So when I go out and buy a car, I go to the auto auction. I buy it for about 25 cents on the dollar and pay cash. And I always buy a used one, 2-3 years old. So I let you go out and buy one for $40,000. And then it'll depreciate by $10,000 when you drive it off the showroom floor. Then you drive it for 2 or 3 years and put 40,000 or 50,000 miles on. And then when it's repossessed and it goes through the auto auction over there, I'll buy that same car for $10,000 cash. That's the way I do it. Makes more sense to me. Of course, I'm just an old country boy, and I don't know too much, but I learned from a guy that came from the country, and old Frank Rocha told me that he had never had shoes till he was 17 years old. And that was one tough old dude. Taught me how to bind my feet with burlap. I never have had to do that. I've always had shoes, but if I ever end up without shoes, I know how to bind my feet with burlap. I'll keep my tender feet off the ground. I do know that much. Now let's run through this drill again here, boys and girls, and let me show you what happens to you. You go out here and you buy this house for $50,000, and you keep it for 30 years, and you pay $186,000 on the house. You sell it for $250,000, you net $63,000, rounded off to $64,000. How many 1985 Chevrolet automobiles can you buy with that $64,000? And the answer is 11, 22, 33, 44, 55, 66. So you can buy about six cars. So you've made all these payments for all these years, and it's going to net you six cars. That's the purchasing power equivalent. Not an absolute dollar, just purchasing power. So that's where everybody is falling down on the job. You know, you people go to college, and you don't take the compound interest of inflation into account. Your purchasing power is less. Your purchasing power today with $250,000 won't buy what it could have bought in 1955. I'm just telling you, you lost your purchasing power. All right, so you work for 30 years for six cars. All right. In the same 30-year period, if you hadn't bought this house, Remember, you were making $1,000 a month, weren't you? $12,000 a year, 1955, 56, 57, 58, 59, 60. How many automobiles could you have bought over that same 30 years? And the answer is 30. You could have bought 30 cars over 30 years. So you lost 24 cars. That's what you lost, 24 cars. You lost 24 cars worth of purchasing power buying that house. Now, I know, you people go to college, and you get degrees after your names, and then you come out here in the marketplace, and you go to work for General Motors and Microsoft, and you got a business degree, and then you can add and subtract. And so what happens is that you buy a house in 1955 for $50,000, you sell it for $250,000, and you say to yourself, well, I made a $200,000 profit. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. You haven't figured your cost of goods sold. Let me show you what cost of goods sold is. Let's suppose that we went out, and we were going to manufacture a waterbed. And we go down to the lumber yard and we buy some lumber, and we pay $10 for the lumber. Then we go over to the hardware store and we pay $5 for some hardware. All right, now we've got hardware and lumber. Now let's apply some labor to this. And let's apply, say, 2 hours worth of labor, and let's value our labor at $5 an hour. That's minimum wage, that's $10. You see, you have to add this up. Now we're gonna sell this waterbed frame for $50. Now we got $25 in it, right? And we sell it for $50. Now we've doubled our money, haven't we? That's a pretty good business deal. Doubled your money. It's what we call a keystone market. But when you bought this house over here, and you bought it for $50,000, and you sold it for $250,000, and you say, wow, I got five marks on this. No, you don't. No, you don't. You haven't subtracted your cost of goods sold over 30 years. All those expenses. And I want to tell you that 5%, $50 a month, will not pay the upkeep on a house. I'm just going to tell you, $90,000 is your minimum loss. Your loss is actually greater than $90,000. Because the insurance was greater than $50 a month. The taxes were greater than $50 a month. In 1955, they weren't. But as time went on, they kept raising your taxes. And as they keep raising your taxes and raising your insurance, you see, that goes on to your cost of goods sold. I didn't put that in there. I just gave you $50, $600 a year straight through. So I gave you the most liberal numbers I could give you. And the minimum loss on a 30-year transaction is $90,000. About double what you paid for this. There's no money to be made. The break-even point was at 5 years. Here's why. You see, in 1955, that $5,000 that you paid down was equal to two cars. 56 was equal to one car. 57 was equal to a car. 58 was equal to a car. 59 was equal to a car. Remember that? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1959 was the break-even point. From 1959 on. So in 1960 through 65, 24 payments. 24 years that you were making these payments on this house. All of the money that went into this house after 1960 was a loss. It's gone, gone forever. How did you pay for this house? Out of your labor, out of your earnings from mutual plywood. This house is a net loss. Now I know somebody's going to look at me and they're going to say, well, you dummy, you had to live someplace for 30 years. What do you want to do, throw it away on rent? That's what people usually say. And that's not an original thought. That came from some Jew in the Bronx someplace that came up with that. And that's what we call overcoming objections. See, when you go to sales school, they tell you got to overcome objections. So when people say, well, gosh, look at how much this is going to cost. What do you want to do, throw all your money away on rent? Oh, yeah. Gosh, I don't want to throw my money away on rent. Heaven forbid. I do. I want to throw my money away on rent for about 5 or 6 years while I save half so that I can go out here and build my own house like Henry Moore did. Well, Henry, you know, smartest kid in the class of 57 was 2 years behind in the ninth grade when I met him. Great big tall lanky kid, should have been a junior that year, and he was a freshman. I thought, well, gosh, that guy, he can't be too smart. He's 2 years behind. And then we come back to our class reunion, you know, 40 years later, and here's old Henry sitting on $1 million. He made it in real estate, but he didn't make it by buying a house and making payments on it here, boys and girls. He made it by building houses and then turning around and renting those houses. God knows how much money that guy made over that period of time on that rent, off those people that were throwing their money away on rent, you know. All right, you got those numbers down, boys and girls? When you buy a house for $50,000, you're going to sell it 30 years later for $250,000. Subtract your cost of goods sold, $186,000. You're going to have a $64,000 gross profit. Now, notice I put a capital gain tax in there for you, $17,892, about $18,000. Now, old Jimmy Carter came along and said, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let you have your once-in-a-lifetime house transaction over here, and you won't have to pay your capital gain tax on it. Okay, so subtract it out. Subtract it out. Doesn't help you, and you still got a $90,000 loss. And that's because purchasing power, boys and girls. Let's pay attention to purchasing power. A $20 Double Eagle in 1930 would buy you a Hickey Freeman suit, wingtip shoes, shirt, and suspenders to go along with it. Today, that $20 gold piece will still buy you the same Hickey Freeman suit and the wingtip shoes and the shirt and the belt and the suspenders to go with it. But over that same period of time, if you put a $20 bill in a dresser drawer in 1930, take the same $20 bill out and go down to John's suit shop and put it on the counter, it probably will buy you the necktie for $20. Buy you the necktie. Now that's the loss in your purchasing power. And that's called inflation. And it works in geometric progression. So last time, remember I told you a little story about the little boy with the horseshoes? All right, now you take a penny and you double that 40 times, or 32 times. 32 nails. You just double a penny 32 times and it's $40 million on the last doubling. That's what geometric progression does. And that's what building contractors and banks do to you. We got geometric progression working for us and working against you. So tuck that one away in your heart. So if you think you're missing out on the real estate market in 2005, the last thing that I want to put a dollar in is real estate. And any real estate that I've got over here that I don't need, I've already sold. It's gone. I don't have any real estate to sell. And I've already sold it and I'm sitting on the gold. Now you want to wait until this real estate market unravels. Then go back into the market and buy it for pennies on the dollar. Or in purchasing power terms and hyperinflation, what the hell difference does it make to you if the price goes up? In hyperinflated dollars, it's always, what does the dollar purchase? In hyperinflation, you got more dollars, but they purchase less and less. That isn't what you want, is it? So you want to maintain your purchasing power. And if you want to make money in real estate, I'll show you next time how to do that with gold and silver. In 1955, if you'd have bought that same house in 1955, paid cash for it, you'd have made some money. If you'd have taken the same amount of gold and silver coin, tucked it away, you would have made some money. There's ways to make profit, but you got to get in geometric progression. You want to avoid arithmetic progression. And working for wages is just arithmetic. Now, it's not a bad thing in life to work for wages, and if you're a truck driver or you're a mechanic or something, I wouldn't be ashamed of it. I've got three or four trades. I'm a tradesman. But that's not where the money's at. The money is in buying, selling, and trading. And that's why I teach a business school on business. Business, the old-fashioned way, how to buy a house. Buy a house, you pay cash for it. That's the way to buy a house. How do you pay cash for it? You save your money. How do you save your money? Cut your living standard in half for 3 years, and you'll have enough money to build a house and pay cash. And you'll make $200,000 for your effort. All right, we got to take a break here until tomorrow night. And I'll be back tomorrow night, and we'll talk a little more about this. Next time, we'll take up gold and silver. You've been listening to The Law, or an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law School, or The Law Hour, is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, there's the signal. Says time's up. We got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.